Wow. All right.
So okay.
It's a good segue from this to gay movies.
Except for that we can't segue that way since this is not for publication.
Hello, listeners. We've been talking about penises before. You've been listening.
Welcome to this new edition of the podcast where we're going to be discussing Bohemian Rhapsody and Boy Erased, LGBT movies of wildly differing quality. Well, maybe not wildly, depending on your mileage. So I'm here with Murtada El Fadl.
Hello.
And Chris Vile.
Hello. Happy to be back.
I don't know what either of you think of Bohemian Rhapsody, but I did not like it.
Well, you mentioned, like, wildly different quality, and I've read wildly different responses on it. Nobody really saying that it's good. I haven't seen it. I haven't had the chance to. But vacillating from people saying, it's so terrible, but I had so much fun, to people just outright absolutely loathing the movie. So I'm curious to hear more of your thoughts about it. And Murtada, have you seen it?
I've seen it. It's pretty bad. I would say it's one of the worst movies I've seen this year.
Wow.
Terrible movie. Like, lowest 5%. How about that? Am I clear about how much I don't like this movie?
Well, the thing is, it is fun in some ways. Like, the concert scene. Like, if you like Queen's music, it's kind of fun to sit through, but it's bad. And so,
is it fun, though? Because I think only the last 20 minutes are fun, even if you do like Queen's music.
Okay,
yeah.
I know that the movie ends, and I know that this is probably not a spoiler for listeners who also haven't seen it, but I know that the movie ends essentially with a recreation of the Live Aid performance. But I've also read a lot of people saying that the CGI is so terrible. So is it, like, fun in the way that I have fun with bad movies, where it's like you're kind of laughing at it and it's a mess? Or is it, like, is the CGI really not that distracting?
I mean, it's not that fun because it's very earnest. Like, the whole thing of the movie, like, it's not a bad movie you enjoy because it's earnest and serious and, like, trying to tell this story with a lot of moralizing. So it's not fun in that way. I wasn't distracted by the CGI in the last 20 minutes because most of it you spend with the actors playing the band. So I think the CGI is just a crowd. So there's cutting to them, but it didn't really bother me. Did it bother you, Nathaniel?
No, I didn't. I was in it for the music at that point, which is the only thing that got me through the movie. That and the reaction shots of the cats, of which there are at least 30 reaction shots of cats looking at the characters, which I loved. So in that way, it was a bad movie I loved, personally.
So that's how they keep the queer identity into the movie, is they put a bunch of cats in there.
Well, you know, Freddie Mercury had a thing for cats, so he has all these, like, kittens running around in his home. But you know, not every filmmaker would choose to have the kittens react to everything that's happening on screen.
Yeah.
I mean,
I want a super cut of that, and I'll give it an A+. But otherwise, boo, it's a bad movie.
Yeah, just get us the cats. I didn't even notice the cats, but now I just want that super cut.
You didn't notice them? They're all over the movie.
I was just lost of how bad it is, and it's such, like, the band's version of the story.
Yeah.
That you're just like, there is no reason for this to exist at all, because I'm going to do one scene. Sorry, I'm going to spoil this. So if you are sensitive about spoilers, skip 3 minutes. There is the scene that just bothered me the most, where Freddie Mercury is finally coming out as gay and hedonistic, and we'll talk about that more. But anyway, he's throwing this big party, and he's being, like, you know, out, you know, shirtless and dancing and taking drugs.
And wearing a crown.
And wearing a crown. And then there's the other four members of the band sitting quietly in a corner, each one of them holding the hand of his wife. And then Freddie says, oh, you know, have some drugs or have some drinks. And they literally look at him and say, we don't do that. We're married now.
Sure, they didn't.
This tells you what bullshit this movie is. And this is basically what, I guess, Brian May and Robert Taylor want to tell their grandchildren. We were so good.
It yeah. was Freddy that was the instigator of all the trouble.
Freddy they have a evil. History of trying to boost their own standing because so much of Queen's legacy is Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
And they have a history, a long history of trying to wedge themselves into the narrative and kind of redefine what the narrative of that band is.
Yeah.
That is suspicious.
Well, the thing is, like, if you look at Queen in some ways was like Fleetwood Mac in that everybody in the band wrote things.
Yeah.
But if you look at all their biggest hits, it's like almost all of them are Freddie Mercury compositions. And so then the movie has scenes that try to, you know, where they're actually dialogue in which Freddie acts like he can't write without their help. Like, he goes on a solo thing in the movie. He signs a solo contract, and he says the record was shit or whatever, and I needed that pushback from you guys. So there's all these, like, sops to them being important to the band, too, which, look, they were. It was a band. But still, it's so obvious in the movie.
Well, it's also yeah. a little bullshitty because they also did separate projects from Queen, too, and you don't hear sob stories on their side then that, you know, they needed the band unity to be successful. Like,
yeah,
interesting.
Each one of them gets, like, a whole scene about how they came up, like, Brian May, how he came up with We Will Rock You, and I don't even know what the third dude's name is, but he did another one, Bites the Dust. And it's a whole scene, like, oh, genius. Oh, yeah, and Freddie's saying, you're a genius. You know, intercut with to Nathaniel's point, the other scenes where Freddie can't write a song to save his life when he went solo. Like, it's just so bad, guys. So bad.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of these things, like, we're making it sound like it's really blatant. A lot of these things are more, like, insidious. They're, like, threaded through the movie. So if you don't have any vested knowledge of the band, or I think it would be easy to be tricked into buying the propaganda.
Wow.
Which is why it's upsetting.
So much of what I've read about this movie, including your review, Nathaniel, makes this just sound like a movie that was made in 1993 or something. Like, this is the Queen movie from 25 years ago.
Well, they've been trying to make it that long, I think.
Yeah. Or it was, like, made in 1998 for VH1. Like,
yeah. I mean, it, like, the gay stuff is maddening, and I guess we should go there.
Yeah. I mean, it's very moralizing about the gay stuff, right? Like, it's just
horrible. The way it's shot is, like, red lights, deep shadows. Like, when any, like, gay sex is involved, which, of course, is never shown, but whenever it's alluded to, it's, like, scary, you know?
Mm.
Or, like, oh, now he's going down the path that will ruin him, you know? I was like, really? And this is from a gay director, and I know Bryan Singer has his own issues, but, like, you don't expect that level of, like, visually expressive homophobia to come from a gay director.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the whole thing of, like, once Freddie let, you know, the bad gay into him and became this hedonistic person, he just lost his way and the band had to save him back to being good, you know, with his chaste boyfriend who refuses to be touched. It's just like, it's everything is so bad.
And, I mean, it's not even true to history either, because it's not like Freddie didn't, like, they imply that Freddie was led down this path by this bad dude. But he was, like, polyamorous, like, slept with women and men. He was hardly this, like, angel that had to be corrupted after he was famous. I mean, it's, like, bullshit.
Right.
It's bullshit. And it made me mad.
Yeah, just back to this is the band's version of the story that they want out there.
Yeah. Yeah, but it
which make
yeah, especially the stuff with the, like, chaste boyfriend. I'm like, even that is such bullshit. That's a real person. Like, that part of the story is true, but certainly couldn't have been true in the way that they describe, because they lived together for years. I'm 100% sure they weren't a sexless couple, you know?
Or that there wasn't sex to be had elsewhere and they still had a happy relationship.
Yeah.
Yes, right?
Interesting.
Like people, yeah, it's just presented in this gay sex is the worst thing that could ever happen to a genius like Freddie.
Yeah, anyway.
Tell me about Rami Malek, because we haven't brought him up yet. And if there's any curiosity that keeps me there, especially after hearing from you both, it's Rami Malek.
I mean,
is it all the teeth? Is it the prosthetic teeth?
I mean, I like him as an actor so much that I, like, was frustrated that I wasn't getting much from that performance, but it feels like there's nothing in the script to support any read of that other than, like, tragic, lonely gay. So he has a lot of, you know, a little bit goes a long way of that. You know, he has a lot of, like, close-ups of pining for his ex-girlfriend, and, like, I just didn't feel much of a character there, other than, like, the showman. Like, I think he's good in the concert scenes, lip-syncing, you know.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the script saddled, it's such a terrible script. And basically, he's saddled with all these exposition scenes and all these scenes that he's just, you know, playing. I don't even know what he's playing. He didn't really pop for me in any scene where he gets to be emotional because the writing is so bad and just the situations he's in are so false. But yes, in the sort of when he's on stage and he's trying to sort of approximate the physicality of Freddie Mercury, he's fine. And I think you're taken through those scenes by the fact that he's lip syncing and not singing, mm-hmm. because you're hearing Freddie's voice and not his. So yeah, I guess he was fine.
Yeah.
Certainly not Oscar nomination worthy. But who knows, it's gonna be a big hit, so I suppose it's possible.
Yeah, the movie's making a lot of money, and I mean, I guess that doesn't hurt him, especially when you have, like, First Man still tanking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, fine, he seems like a nice guy, whatever. If he gets a nomination, I'll be okay. But this movie does not deserve to be an Oscar-nominated movie. It's so bad.
Do you guys think it'll even fall into the, like, musical trap where it gets a sound mixing nomination? Or those teeth get nominated for best makeup?
I don't think it's going to be... Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I've been wrong before, and the sound guys are always a little hard to figure out what they're looking for. Because sometimes they want music films, sometimes they don't, you know.
So what's with how does the sort of lip-syncing part of it, does that help it, or does that detract from it getting nominated for sound mixing? Because they had to mix voices, so I guess that's a plus?
I would say it's a minus currently, because if you think about it, like, Les Mis got so much attention to, like, the live vocals, and they got the sound nominations, and A Star Is Born getting all these raves for everything being performed live. I think the mood is more towards the level of difficulty of live singing.
Mm-hmm.
That's my feeling.
Mm. I mean, I don't know.
I think if there's a nomination here, it's Rami Malek, but I, you know, there are definitely 5 better performances this year, so.
But he's going to be one of the most widely seen performances.
That's
like,
true.
if you look at Best Actor, like, this is a huge hit. Like, only Bradley Cooper, you know, likely to have been seen by more people than Rami Malek.
Yeah. So, let's discuss Best Actor, since we're already leading into that conversation. I'm going to just pull up my handy chart.
I mean, it's Bradley Cooper's to lose, right? Like, who is going to vote for someone else this year?
I mean, I could see Bradley Cooper being in a situation where he loses all of his nominations for A Star Is Born. In that, you know, a lot of nominations for the same movie might be the reward.
Well, he's definitely winning the Globe. So he's going to win the Globe. He's going to give a speech. It's going to be great. He's going to have momentum from that. That's how I see it going. And then I'm sure SAG will probably go with him. I don't know who will win comedy, but probably will go with Cooper, too.
I think Viggo will win comedy. That's my feeling.
I gotta tell you, I'm like clenching every time I see something for Green Book. I'm not excited for this movie. That does seem like a like scenario. Do you know if The Old Man and the Gun is being submitted as a comedy or as a drama? Because I think it would be fair to submit that as a comedy. I mean, it's probably just more lighthearted and it's a fable, but I feel like that would be a wise way to go for that movie because it at least tells the audience kind of what they're in for, whereas if you think that you're going into some like serious, heavy movie, you're being entirely sold the wrong thing. And like, Sissy Spacek and Robert Redford get to be really cute when they flirt, and it's charming.
I mean, I don't know how it's been submitted there, but comedy wouldn't surprise me. So I suppose Robert Redford would totally be possible as a winner as well.
Yeah, but this movie is like, if we look at this is Fox Searchlight's number 3 movie, right? Like last year they had Battle of the Sexes. They managed to get it a couple of nominations, but I think this movie is in that same position where Robert Redford might get nominated at the Globes, and that would be like the end of that story because it hasn't really ignited the box office. I don't know anyone who has actually, apart from you guys, who has actually seen the movie.
I have not actually seen it.
People have not been excited by seeing it, and then the people that I've talked to that have seen it have been surprised by it. I was personally surprised by it. I thought it was lovely. You know, if we're talking Globes comedy a little bit, who I wouldn't at all be surprised, especially if it is considered comedy, and this, talk about a movie that just like kind of died and went nowhere, John C. Reilly for the Sisters Brothers.
He's campaigning big time. Like, he's doing every Q&A and, you know, kissing babies and doing so many interviews, so it might work out.
But
maybe.
Tanking. We're talking tanking at the box office.
Yeah, it's gone. Dead.
Which does not help. I mean, it's one thing to not ignite the box office like Old Man and the Gun, but to just absolutely flop is dangerous for awards campaigns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because at least Robert Redford, his movie's always, like, have some box office interest. Like, this one's doing okay.
Yeah.
Considering nobody's talking about it, I would say it's doing really well. you know, the level of discourse versus, you know, the box office is pretty good.
Agreed.
And I'm thinking BlacKkKlansman is going drama, because I would like Joan David Washington to make an appearance at the Globes, because if he doesn't with 10 spots, that campaign will die.
He's so good. Did either of you happen to see Monsters and Men? His performance is more supporting, but he's really wonderful in that movie.
I have not seen but Nick raved about it, so I've been meaning to.
I haven't seen it either, but it seems to me like BlacKkKlansman is just sort of like, it's doing well. People are talking about it in awards, but mainly for picture and director, maybe screenplay, and it's looking like that's where it actually might win in adapted screenplay if they really want to honor Spike Lee. But I hope Joan David Washington at least makes it to the Globes. And if then the cast appears in the SAG for Best Ensemble.
I could totally see that happening as a nomination.
Yeah, that would help his campaign. And maybe he'll knock Rami Malek off. Let's do that. Let's hope for that.
Agreed.
Do we think Clint Eastwood is happening, or was that only when the trailer came out that people were like, oh, he's getting nominated?
The studio has said that they are just going for box office, which seems like, you know, that's not a bad time to release that movie and make some money, but it is curious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, why else would you open it, I think, literally the same weekend as Million Dollar Baby? Though the Million Dollar Baby story has, like, is that something we're perpetuating as people who pay attention to these things and not something that's ever actually been a thing since Million Dollar Baby? I don't know. That talk about a movie that I'm like, I do not want to have to sift through this. Like,
yeah.
I just can't imagine there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm for this movie unless it's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to deal with it either, but, and it seems to me, like, Warner Brothers, what you doing? You got the presumptive front runner. Why are you trying to create competition for him?
Which is another reason that I think maybe they are just going for money.
And he's in it, Bradley Cooper.
Yes, yeah, he's in it. Unless they want to do like Bradley Cooper and Clint Eastwood doing it together, going to every place, and then that sort of helps Bradley Cooper's.
Yeah, because it gets to be cute because they're in the same room together or whatever.
Cute. Good choice of words there, Chris.
I guess. I don't know.
I mean, Willem Dafoe, that's still possible, I guess.
That was going to be one of my questions, because you've both seen At Eternity's Gate, correct?
I have not seen it yet.
I've seen it.
My opportunities.
He's very good in it, but that movie is so, like, just an art movie. Like, I can see people putting that screener in and 3 minutes in, they're like, what the fuck? And changing it to something like Green Book or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's not a screener that's a lot of people are going to see it. He's obviously, he's deserving, but also he has competition for the sort of like critic slot, because I think a lot of people will vote for Ethan Hawke. The critics might go for Ethan Hawke in a big time, because he's got Paul Schrader, who's never been nominated for, you know, and getting this comeback. So that's a movie that might get actually two nominations, screenplay and actor. So
you guys, I've been mystified the whole year that people think I'm being crazy to have had Ethan Hawke slotted for so long, but I just don't see him missing.
You have been on that at the very beginning, and I'm 100% behind you. He's going to win most of the critics.
Well, I don't know about that, because I truly wouldn't be surprised to see Bradley Cooper get critical support in that way, but I mean, people love Ethan Hawke, and like, it is a way to recognize this movie that did very well for what it is.
Yeah.
Even better critically.
Yeah. And it's just like, it hasn't been, you know, Best Actress has obviously been very exciting all year. And I don't think this is just because I'm an actor sexual, but Best Actor has been a little this year.
Yeah. I mean, you're already talking about a lot of movies that either seem weak or that people don't like enough.
Hmm. I mean, but you know, just I don't. Do you see like Bradley Cooper winning the New York Film Critics Circle or the LA Film Critics? I don't see that happening. He might win, you know, regional critics, but I think the big critical organizations will go to someone like Ethan Hawke or maybe Willem Dafoe. But and that could help them. You know, Marion Cotillard way. Entered the race by winning those critics awards. I can see Ethan Hawke doing the same thing.
And see, I think Ethan Hawke is probably perfectly fine to get in. I think there's enough conversation around that movie and him. I think the person who could use the boost, honestly, is Ryan Gosling.
Yes.
That I think he could get.
I was just
going to
say that. He could really use critics awards, Ryan Gosling, but I don't think he's going to win it. For whatever reason, people just don't seem enthused about that movie. Like, I'm actually starting to think that Damien Chazelle might miss, which shocks me, because early on I thought he was a done deal for Best Director. Because it's such a, like, an ambitious, you know, movie.
I mean,
the movie's going to have to be brought back into the conversation in a big way. I don't think that's a crazy call, Nathaniel.
That he'll miss?
Oh, I don't think that's crazy at all.
Right, but I mean it, given the project itself, it seemed like it should have been a done deal.
I mean, all the conversation about First Man now is about how it's nobody wants to see it and its box office is terrible. I mean, I guess
they opened it at the wrong time, honestly.
It should have been like a summer movie, like a counter-programming, like Bridge of Spies or something. Wasn't that summer? No.
Nope, they opened like the same weekend as First Man.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like maybe a Dunkirk. You know, like a big counter-programming, big drama spectacle for adults.
Like a Thanksgiving or Christmas time when people are willing to sit down with something a little more serious-minded.
Yeah.
I mean, they were going for the Bridge of Spies, Gravity, Captain Phillip audience, which all opened on that weekend, but they didn't have A Star is Born the weekend before them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And Venom making a ton of money. And also, like, First Man, for what it really is a much smaller focused movie. Shockingly, like, it's about this huge mission, but it's a smaller movie. It really is, to me at least. I don't know.
I mean, I think that the intimacy of it is why it's good, personally.
Yeah.
But it might also be why people have not responded.
Yeah.
What
Maybe
if
they
First
weren't
Man...
in the mood for that.
What if First Man becomes the Kinsey of this year, and it just ends up with supporting actress, and that's it?
I feel like you're trying to cause trouble, Murtada.
Maybe a little bit. You know I didn't care for First Man.
Yeah.
And then there's Christian Bale.
Yeah, I mean...
It's good to have a question mark, but, like, this is a question mark that I'm also just, like, bristling at. I don't know.
I mean, I think as much as I am annoyed by automatic nominations, he's, you know, that type of performer. And it's that type of project. So I think even if people don't love the movie, it should be easy for him to get in.
Yeah.
Which is annoying to me, but what can you do? I don't think it should ever be easy to get nominated for an Oscar, is my point. Which is why it frustrates me with Meryl Streep all the time. Like, you should have to be doing really good work that excites people, not because you're insert name here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have to deal with the whole Dick Cheney thing. I mean, the press tour for that hasn't started yet, but I was just reading, they did some events, something in L.A. yesterday, and they were part of the movies presented, and what I read of it is just like, oh, Dick Cheney was the American dream, but it was the American dream that gone wrong. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to deal with this bullshit for like the next 3 months in something as fun and I enjoy like the Oscars. Now it has to make room for Dick and fucking Lynn Cheney. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's the GOP has made this year and last year such complete nightmares. That the idea of lionizing them in any way, and I get that the movie might be, you know, not, you know, depiction is not endorsement, it might actually be a critique of them, but still, it's still like...
It looks a little glib.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I mean, maybe that's just from that trailer. And there's also, there's movies that I think deal with it this year in much more interesting ways that aren't so directly tied, that it's like, open the room for different types of discussion without actually making us look at these awful people directly related to how horrible the world is right now, and it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it almost seems like trying to, I know that we haven't seen the movie, so the movie probably doesn't do this, given the director's political proclivities, but it almost seems like, let's excuse these people because they aren't as bad as the new people.
Okay. Or you know, we can laugh at these people. And
because we didn't even know how bad we were going to get it. It's just like the whole thing just makes me feel ill a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know we're talking about Best Actor, but I am even more ill by the fact that Amy Adams, somebody I really love in act, you know, her, I love her acting, who played such amazing roles, will have to maybe then win for playing Lynn Cheney. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to hear her speech to be all about how she found the connection with Lynn Cheney.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like Meryl Streep winning for, like, playing, like, a hard right character. I was like, I just don't need all this, like, glamorizing of these people who made the world worse.
Yeah, and Meryl had to do that. Meryl had to talk about how, you know, Margaret Thatcher was a feminist and how she was like a pioneer and all that bullshit.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. It just gives me the heebie-jeebies. I want it 1 year away from the GOP.
To maybe put like a happier cap on this conversation, and if we're talking about people who could use the boost that I think could potentially get the boost that I would love to see it go even further, is Lakeith Stanfield for Sorry to Bother You. That feels like a very easily possible Globe comedy nomination that I am still in love with that performance, and I hope people keep talking about.
Oh, that would be lovely, because he's already on the Gotham.
So good and so funny. Yeah. Yes, he's nominated at the Gothams. That Gotham's lineup is fantastic.
Gothams are so weird, though. Yeah, that's what you get when
I
you
know.
Have
that's jury... why I love them.
Yeah, that's what you get when you have juried nominations, which is exciting. That's why they're exciting, because you never know what they're going to do.
Yeah, Lakeith would be a great nomination. And I know you guys, I don't know about you, Chris, but I know Nathaniel doesn't like this movie. But I wouldn't be mad at Steve Carell in Beautiful Boy. I really loved him.
I'm not a fan of the movie either. I maybe like it to a tiny degree more than Nathaniel does, but...
that wouldn't be difficult.
Well, no, I mean, that's interesting. I think if the movie stays in the conversation, he could as well.
So, Nathaniel, on your Patreon Best Actor now, you have Bradley, Vigo, Ethan Hawke, Christian Bale, and Clint Eastwood. Have you changed your mind since you made that on October 14th?
The only one I'm wavering on is Clint Eastwood. I mean, I put it there right when the trailer came out, and, you know, who knows? Maybe it could just be a box office thing, but they also said that, bear in mind, people forget already, they also said that about Black Klansman.
Yeah.
That it was box office only?
Yeah, that it wasn't going to be, like, an awards thing, you know. I think it's misdirection to not end up with the Star is Born problem.
Hmm.
I think most times studios would, if they can get away with it, I think they would prefer to wait a little for their awards campaign. So that, you know, people aren't tired of the movie by the time they have to put it on ballots.
Hmm.
Which is the problem A Star is Born is going to have. Because it's been, you know, so successful and people have been talking about it so much that, you know, the nominations are still like 2 months away, essentially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So who would you replace Clint with if you were to do it today? Like, if you think you're not that into him anymore. Is it Rami?
I mean, the box office worries me. Maybe it is Rami. I mean, I still think Willem Dafoe could happen.
Mm-hmm.
He was really close last year. I mean, maybe not because, like, Sam Rockwell started to steamroll, but, like, he had a lot of goodwill last year from the Florida Project that could just, like, build on top of that.
Yeah, even if people aren't that enthused about the movie, sometimes the carryover from previous years helps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it hurts, but...
Yeah. One person we can discount is... Hugh Jackman. That movie, The Front Runner, Chris, is my nominee for you guys doing it next week. This had Oscar buzz.
I'll be reviewing it on the site this week. I am on the record as agreeing with you. I don't think that the movie has outright problems, but like Hugh Jackman is playing someone who is like notoriously cagey, and he plays him cagily. So I don't think that Hugh Jackman's going to happen necessarily.
Although, Hugh Jackman, I mean, they are doing a lot of promotion for it. They definitely want to be in the awards conversation.
Right.
And I could see Golden Globes helping it.
I predict that movie is not going to do well at the box office. It's just a story that I don't think anybody would care about it today and the way it's presented. But, you know, I could be wrong. I thought it was almost as bad as Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Jason Reitman's so hit and miss.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, the script is just not good. And it's like, it takes forever to get to the meat of the story that you want to get to. There's a lot of setup. And then once you get there, they don't know what to do with it. And it's like, even like its political sort of like stand that it's trying to take is a little muddled. And anyway, I thought it was a pretty bad movie.
It's definitely at a disadvantage being what the movie is and what the movie is going for by opening in the Oscar season, I think, because I don't think it's going to measure up to that for people, even though, like, I don't think that the movie has as large of problems as you do, but I also don't think that it's very exciting.
Well, they're promoting it a lot by bringing up Robert Altman.
Mm-hmm.
Which
is a stretch.
Strikes me as a mistake because, like, the people who love Robert Altman, that's really hard magic to duplicate. So you're likely to set them up for disappointment. And the people mm-hmm. who don't love Altman won't even know what you're talking about. You know? So I'm not sure that that's going to help it, that it keeps being pitched like, oh, it's Altman-esque, you know.
The other one in the Best Actor race that we haven't brought up yet that I guess we could talk about the movie too is Lucas Hedges for Boy Erased. That I just don't see that happening
for
him
either. Though I do think the combo of that and Ben is back will at least have people talking about him.
Yes.
I don't think either performance is... I mean, he's obviously very, very talented, but I don't think either performance alone is exciting enough to generate voting for him interest.
Yeah.
But the combo of them, I could see helping.
Oh, I guess I'm going to be the curmudgeon of this podcast. Is he talented, though? Because my main takeaway from Boy Erased is like, maybe this dude does not really do well leading a movie. And that
I think he's miscast in both.
Yeah, I just thought he gave me one note, the whole movie of Boy Erased. And I know he was playing somebody who's in trauma and trying to come out and all of that. But the note I got was melancholy constipation.
Which is,
well,
you blur
think
poor, they're going to put that on the FYC ads.
Lucas Hedges, the best at melancholy constipation. If you want one note performance, go see Boy Erased.
Ouch.
Well, Chada, I don't disagree with you that that's what's happening. I think it's more the movie's problem and Joel Edgerton's problem than Lucas Hedges, because it asks so little of him. And I felt like my opinion of it was that it was a little gross to me because it felt like he was being used as a tool in someone else's story.
Mm.
And like the movie just never like was interested in what his interior life was. It was just interested in as painting him as sad, depressed. And it's like, I think anyone who's gone through a queer experience knows that there's way more interesting notes than that.
Yeah, coming out.
This is supposed to be illuminating in terms of what the experience of conversion therapy is like, or growing up in a conservative family. It feels very cliched and well-intended. I should say that I do think that this movie has good intentions, but it lacks a lot of depth.
I mean, well intentions are not art, right? And you're right there. You nailed it. It's well intentioned, but it's not really a movie that there is no art to what it's trying to do at all. And the one thing I want to say, like, you know, the movie is sort of portraying him as this one note sat, whatever. But there are scenes that where he could have varied his emotional registers a little bit. Like that scene where he meets the little cute artist boy and, you know, they're in college. This is, you know, first meeting of people obviously attracted to each other. But he just played it with the same note. He's still sad, even though this cute boy is flirting with him. That's just one example of a scene where he could have varied his performance a little bit.
I can see that criticism. I think for me the problem is the filmmakers not realizing that the story they're best suited to tell is actually a drama about the parents. Which is why I think you're getting the thing of him just being like a tool for, you know.
Have either of you read the memoir?
I have not, no.
And that's one thing that I think is true about the book, because the book does focus so much more on family history, family dynamics, than it does necessarily provide the details of conversion therapy. And maybe some of that is how much Garrett Conley was willing to go into it or wanted to, you know, tell his story and what he thought was essential or what he could even recall. And the movie spends more time than I would say the book does. I think you're right, Nathaniel. There's a certain trepidation that the movie really wants to be a movie about and for parents who cope with being in a conservative environment, having the convictions they do, and wanting to love and be welcoming to their child.
Yeah.
And how they have to reconcile with that. And some of the most interesting stuff in the movie, because I think the best things about it are Russell Crowe and Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, I agree. And That's why, but, and I realized the movie would have got a lot of pushback if it had made Lucas had just more of the supporting character. People were like, oh, queer people sidelined from their own stories. But I do think everybody is deserving of their story to be told, so why shouldn't conservative parents of gay people have dramas about them?
Well, yeah, like, they can have a movie, and, like, that doesn't bother me. I mean, like I said, I feel more sidelined. I feel more of a problem with the, like, outright sidelining of Jared, the character's interiority.
Yeah.
Because to me, the movie just
feels
like... Even his
sexuality, you get no sense of what he's attracted to, or... You get no sense of his gayness.
Well, if you read the book, too, like, he was even kind of displaced in that way and not really knowing how to, like, what was there. So, like, I kind of get the milquetoast approach of that. I just have a problem, and I think it even sells, like, the intended audience of parents of queer children short when it feels like even the movie's attitude towards him is, like, you know when you hear those parents saying, like, well, you'll always just be my child, my baby, like that type of thing where it's like, sure, but you're not allowing them any type of identity that they're defining for themselves.
Yeah.
And it feels very pigeonholed. Because yeah. It's like, it treats him very, like, preciously, but not personally.
Mm.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked a little bit about how Bohemian Rhapsody was moralizing about being gay. I felt a little bit of that moralizing in Boy Erased, too, to your point, Nathaniel. Like, there is no, and I know you said it's in the book, but that he was sort of confused about it. But, you know, I can only judge by the movie, and the movie should stand on its own. And it didn't present to me, the trauma that was presented is that he wanted to come out because he's attracted to men. But that wasn't presented in any way that was sort of fun or beautiful or anything. Or even, you know, showing me that he is confused about those feelings. The whole thing was just like sort of glossed over in a very asexual way so that we can spend the bulk of the story with him just looking at all the other people at the conversion center.
Mm.
And another point I wanted to bring up about the parents, you guys both talked about how Nicole Kidman and Russell Crowe were amazing, and I agree. They were the reason to watch that movie. You know, Nicole gets a little bit more towards the end, and that scene was really great. And the only scene where, you know, you get like a sort of like a gut reaction, a feeling of anything that I didn't get in the rest of the movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand they didn't want to make it the story about the parents, but they were at opposing posts reacting to their son being gay. But in silo, why didn't we get one scene where they confront each other or talk to each other about this? That would have actually made the movie more impactful.
Oh,
it doesn't need to be their story.
Yeah, like their conversations are happening off screen.
A scene without Jared, just Nicole and Russell as the parents talking it over. That would have helped the movie so much.
And I just don't think the movie's thinking that deeply, because even the things that I like about the scenes you mentioned with Russell Crowe and Nicole Kidman, I don't think they're scripted very well. I think they're scripted pretty hokey, but, like, those scenes work well because both of those performers are underplaying a lot of these, like, very, like...
Yeah. And they're both such naturally gifted actors that they can they can add shadings and layers to what they're performing.
You are so right, though, Murtado, because I think that's kind of, even if the movie is not, interested in those type of conversations, it does feel like essential information for our experience of the movie, too.
Yeah, I mean, they were living in the same house the whole time this story was taking place. How come they never, like, had a 2-minute conversation over dinner or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think... That would probably be hard to dramatize because I think a lot of the story for parents who have trouble dealing with it is avoidance. And avoidance is not inherently dramatic. But, yeah, I agree. I liked the movie clearly more than either of you did because I thought it had a lot of nice touches. But I will agree it could have used more emotional range than we get. Because there's not a lot of... I always... feel a little bit bad for dramas that don't realize that you can have funny moments without losing your serious message.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Do you guys know any gay men who never laugh or never have any
Yeah, no.
Well, the best moment in the movie is a funny moment when Nicole Kidman's having, like, she's going over the list of, like, infractions.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She, like, gives her that she's not supposed to have, and she's like, whatever her comment about it is, she's like, I got, like, docked a few points because I used to be in a gang and deal drugs. Because it, they're not even talking, like, yeah. The conversion center is concerned with all types of, like, gambling infractions and, you know.
It's so funny.
If you're gay, if you have family history.
I also thought Nicole was very funny in that scene that's actually in the trailer where he says, I'm attracted to men, and then the camera cuts to her, and she does, like, the half turn away where she's so shocked she heard that he's attracted to men. And it was just like, it's supposed to be this gravitas, but I also thought it was so funny the way she reacted to that.
Yeah, I love her in this movie, but then, you know, I'm partial to her.
Yeah, I'm not partial to her, and I love her in this movie.
You're not partial to her?
Like, you know, I enjoy her. I wanted to say one thing, like, if we are going to compare it to Cameron Post, which we have to, the thing that I would give Cameron Post points for is that they got the ridiculousness of the setup of the conversion centers. Like, yes. It's very serious. People die, and people die in both movies going to those centers. But Cameron Post also goes how ridiculous it is to go to a conversion center and try to de-gay yourself. And it presented that in the way, in those scenes, while Boy Erased is so serious about the whole thing that it could have done with a little bit of laughs in those scenes.
Yeah.
And I have similar problems with that movie in that, like, the central character is the one that the movie understands the least. But you're right that the world, it has more to say about the world that it's set in and more to say about, I think, even more layers about conversion therapy than what you're saying. Because there's a certain element to it where it's like, these are compelling people to their audience, you know, and I do think there's something about Cameron Post, particularly like Jennifer Ely's performance, where it's like she can be terrifying, she can grab your attention, she can like be more than just a talking point, because I think in a certain way it does sell the evil of what that situation is better by a long shot than Boy Erased does.
Yeah, I mean, it has more. It has a deeper understanding of the gay experience.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's necessarily a better movie. I mean, I like Desiree Akhavan so much, but that movie also has a little bit of the problem that Boy Erased does in that its tone doesn't have a lot of modulation of its tone. So it's sort of like what you're getting at the beginning is what you're going to get for the whole movie.
Yeah.
And so it's a little hard to take movies like that and go on a journey with them because you feel like you're already there, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. I just thought it was funnier. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely did have more compelling supporting, like the gay conversion, the people who have signed up for it or were forced into it are definitely more compelling in Cameron Post.
Yeah, and
they
those feel
like
sort of
characters.
They do. Unlike Boy Erased, I can't even remember who else was there with Lucas Hedges.
Hello, Xavier Dolan.
Who I am positive was overdubbed, because when I saw that movie, I was like, his dialogue is not synced perfectly. They must have, like, dubbed out his French, or his French-Canadian dialect. It does not even sound like him. Mm. Weird quibble. It annoyed me.
And yeah, then, like
why can't
the only
there be a closeted French Canadian in the movie?
Yeah.
The only laugh that the movie got, which is a terrible laugh, was at the end credits when they reveal that Joel Edgerton's character is now living with his husband in Texas.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible note.
It is, because there's no, like, sorry, Joel, but there's nothing to that performance. He should have cast somebody else, because he is busy directing. Because, like, you don't get any shading to that character to think of him as, like, someone struggling with his own internal stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas, like, the Cameron Post people, you got a sense that they had their own complicated histories in order to be working at that place.
Yes.
Like, yeah. I'm, like, talking myself into liking Cameron Post more than I did at the time.
Well, it does get...
Post still has problems.
I still agree that it gets the conversion center, the people there, whether the inmates or, you know, the people who
inmates,
are being
degraded. I love it.
Who are being degraded and the other, and, you know, and the evil people who are trying to degrade them. Cameron Post gets those characters better, and it understands the inherent ridiculousness of the whole situation.
Yeah. So those are the two movies this week. So I do want to say, for those who see things at home more often, I don't know, does anybody watch DVDs anymore or Blu-rays? It seems like everybody just waits for streaming.
I do.
Yeah. But the new stuff on DVD, The Darkest Minds, which I cannot recommend, it's very bad. Although if you want to see the difference between, I think it's instructive for looking at actors to see the difference between Amanda Stenberg in that movie versus in The Hate U Give, to show what an actual script and character and direction can do for a performer, because she's really bad in one and really great in the other.
Mm-hmm.
Have either of you seen Darkest Minds?
I have not.
Nathaniel, I'm not going to see it because you keep telling me every week it's bad.
Yeah. Well, and then, and also new-ish on DVD, Sorry to Bother You.
Wonderful, we love Lakeith.
Yeah, I love that movie. Have you seen it, Nathaniel?
And Here We Go Again. I was waiting for a quote from Mamma Mia.
I decided to embrace being a grandmother.
Is Meryl really playing a ghost? I haven't seen that film yet.
She really is, yes.
And the curtain call, like the closing credits music, they do Super Trooper again, and they make her say the lyrics, "You'll believe, I'm still alive." And it's like, you cruel people. It's evil.
I think Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again would be a really fun movie to record, like, a commentary track of with the team.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, definitely Jorge, because Jorge is our preeminent Mamma Mia scholar.
Because we haven't done one of those since Mean Girls, like, forever ago.
I could toss out a recommendation that I actually caught up to this morning, and I looked it up, and it's coming to iTunes in the coming weeks. I believe it drops November 20th on iTunes, if people do streaming or rentals, that type of thing. Did either of you get to see Skate Kitchen?
No.
Skate Kitchen is wonderful. It's also nominated at the
Gothams, right?
At the Gothams. Yes, it's directed by Crystal Mozell, who you might have seen the documentary The Wolf Pack. This isn't a documentary, but it features an actual young female skate crew that is real, and it has kind of a documentary feel. I caught up to it this morning, and it's like the lame, easy comparison is mid-90s, but it's like everything about mid-90s that is toxic and like really dull to watch. If you watch Skate Kitchen, it's done so beautifully. It's a very cinematic movie. It's gorgeous. For those who care about female directors, definitely catch up to this movie. That's my streaming recommendation.
Well, while we're talking about female directors, I just saw Leave No Trace. Finally caught up with that.
Please tell me you loved that movie.
I think love might be a strong word, but I really liked it.
Oh, okay. Have you seen Chata?
I have not, but I am going to see it, I think, next week. I'm going to one of those screenings that they do, award screenings, yes.
I mean, it's very moving. I caught my chin quivering a few times.
Yeah.
Like the
Ben Foster is really great.
And they're doing a campaign to him in Best Actor, so...
Yeah, I just talked to him this week, actually.
Oh, wow,
that's great. So maybe he'll appear... he was on the Gothams, and he'll probably appear on the In the Spirits list, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's very... you know, obviously Deborah Granick made Winter's Bone, and there are a lot of easy comparison points to that, including Dale Dickey, the supporting actress. But I think maybe it had been hyped too much because everybody talks about how much they love it. Because I found it moving, but it felt a little, like, modest.
It's incredibly straightforward. It's not a movie that's pulling any punches.
Yeah, so it felt to me a little bit like the same type of accomplishment of Winter's Bone, only not, like, heightened. Winter's Bone had this, like, sort of grandiosity in its moviness. Even
yeah.
though it was, that this one doesn't seem to have, at least for me. So I prefer Winter's Bone. But it was good. It was definitely good. And the actors were strong. And the
yeah,
ending,
I'm looking...
Oh, it's very moving. The
yeah, it's a very... Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I've always liked Ben Foster.
Yeah, he's great. I had a really great interview with him, which will be posted on the site at some point.
Exciting!
So look forward to that. Okay, any last-minute recommendations other than the ones we just named?
I say go see A Star Is Born again.
I was considering my third time yesterday while I was listening to the soundtrack yet again. I'm just... Sorry, people. I know so many people don't like it. I love it. I'm not ashamed.
That, you know, I tried to go to the award screening for A Star Is Born just so as not to pay for it.
Yeah.
But they were all booked up. That movie, people are really going to see it.
Huh.
And people are going again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised to hear that the award screenings were booked up because you'd think that'd be something that people had already seen.
Well, apparently they want to see it again just like me, and they're cheapos, don't want to pay for it, but I guess I'll have to pay for it.
Or they'll just, if they're really selling out the award screenings, they'll just add more award screenings. Because they're not playing around with that movie, they want the Oscars.
So let's make bold predictions for Best Actor.
Oh!
Who do you think is going to win? You know, I think I've already said it. Bradley Cooper is going to win. I don't see anybody else winning that Oscar except him. I know you guys have some reservations that he might, you know, might win other places, but I think Bradley. Nathaniel, your prediction. Just for fun.
At this moment, Viggo Mortensen.
I was going to say, like, I haven't seen the movie. I should be open and accepting to this movie, but like it is that I don't know. And I do see a vision where Viggo Mortensen overtakes it. If this movie really takes off the way that it sounds like people expect this movie to take off.
Yeah. And also it's a really fun performance, I think, which can go a long way.
He's beloved. He's also been nominated several times.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper will likely be nominated in Best Director, and maybe he will split his votes in the way that we don't expect him to.
So who's your prediction right now, Chris?
Oh, Bradley Cooper. Mine would still be Bradley Cooper. Also because I haven't seen Green Book. I can't really
see
it that
but
well,
you said
other
to
than
make,
my trepidations.
You said to make bold predictions. Like, obviously, Bradley Cooper is the front runner. I just don't necessarily think front runners last to winning.
Right.
But look at all the people who want to see A Star Is Born a third and a fourth time. They're definitely... The thing is, once you decide who's your favorite performance of the year, you're not going to change it in a couple of months. You're just going to be with that person. Or at least I would. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's just me trying to talk myself out of... Because I do this almost every year where I really love someone or something, and I just try to talk down their chances to myself because I don't want the disappointment of them losing. Like, because I really want Bradley Cooper to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I mean, you know, we said make bold prediction, and you did Viggo, and that's great. I think it's nice to
love,
have a prediction.
Yeah, I mean, I love Viggo. Love him. I just don't really necessarily want him to win for that movie.
Right.
But I just do really love him as an actor. I think he should have more nominations than he's had.
Yeah. I mean, I would vote, like, even my personal vote would be for Bradley. Even though I love, like, Ethan Hawke, and I love John David Washington and other actors, but I would still vote for Bradley.
I will say about John David Washington, that seeing Murtada, when we went to it the second time, I think it was your third time? for Black Klansman.
Yes, yes.
I was much more impressed with his performance the second time.
Yeah.
Because I think he's doing a lot of, there's a lot of, like, recessiveness to it, because he's observing.
Mm-hmm.
And doing the undercover, and the other people are sort of acting out what he's setting in motion. So there's a little bit of reserve to the performance, but it worked a lot better for me the second time.
I also think he's really funny, too. So, yeah. Like, he gets to play a lot of different notes, and I don't think even some of the best leading actor performances do that this year.
Mm-hmm.
Because my personal pick would probably still be Ethan Hawke, and even that is, like, it's a deep dive into adjacent textures, you
yes.
know, it's not... That was a really pretentious way to describe it, but,
no,
like,
I was just
in
right,
a way
was
to
a
compliment John
to
David Washington
it.
That it's, like, he's able to achieve a lot of different things with that performance.
Yeah. I got to be a guest speaker at a college course on media communications this week.
Fabulous.
And I used Black Klansman as the text, because they wanted to do something that was current and also for, you know, diverse audiences, because the student body.
Mm-hmm.
And it went over really well. So we watched the first 20 minutes of the movie, and then we had a discussion about how to read film and about my biggest thing I was trying to get them to look at was that it's one of these movies that's operating on a lot of different levels, so it's actually a movie about movies just as much as it's about anything else. So since it was a media class, I was trying to get them to think about the history of film and how that movie is using the history of film to make its points.
Yeah.
So it was a really cool discussion. And it made
that's
me
exciting.
Like, and it made me like really reminded me that I really think Spike Lee is going to get nominated. Because he's doing a lot in that movie.
Yeah. I think he might win adapted screenplay. I think it's between him and Nicole Hollis Center. And wouldn't that be lovely? Those two really deserve Oscars, and they have really
yes.
written wonderful scripts this year. So that would be like, that's like my favorite sort of like competition in all the categories, Nicole Hollis Center versus Spike Lee.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've done a lot to gush about Can You Ever Forgive Me, specifically on this podcast and on the site, but, like, I'm at the point in my relationship with Can You Ever Forgive Me that, like, the mere mention of that movie, like, chokes me up. Like, I get emotional thinking about this movie, and it's been so wonderful watching so many people, especially queer people, online discover this movie, and it means so much to them.
Yeah, I was out last night at the birthday party I was telling you guys about before we start recording, and everybody that I mentioned the movie to had just seen it and completely loved it, and like everybody was like, oh my god, like what exactly what you're saying, like it's touching
yeah.
people on a level they weren't necessarily expecting.
Yeah, I'd love to see Mariel Heller get some headway, because like the second watch of the movie really unlocked how incredibly attuned she, I mean, like we talk about straight directors making queer movies, and it's like she's the case that it's like it's not like some people are smart enough about it and get it, and she gets it in a way that doesn't have to telegraph it to you that this is what she's doing, and that she understands the way that like the just the self-preservation tactics of queer people.
Yeah.
And I don't know. No, that's just me right now.
It's so wonderful. We agree. It's so wonderful. We all love it. It's so
yeah.
great.
I just wish Wildlife would get a little bit of love. We've also mentioned that several times, but people just don't seem interested in it. But it's so good.
Yeah.
I'm excited to watch it again, because like it was so precise when I was watching it, but a lot of things have overtaken it in my mind just because they've taken up my headspace more, and
yeah.
I don't know why that is.
I would agree with that.
Like, there's other movies that I can just recall more vividly than that one.
Yeah. So. Me too, actually. So it's worth a second watch.
You know, Phillip's, I saw it was Phillip Wildlife, and he was like, it's not that exciting. And I think that's the reaction of most people. Although I thought, like, Carey Mulligan is very exciting in it.
I agree. But it'll be interesting to see on a second time. I haven't seen Can You Ever Forgive Me a second time yet, so I'm looking forward to that. Because I do.
I will say I wept the second time. I was like, why am I crying? I'm crying so much.
Just because I think second viewings, I don't always do them, but I think it can really, really help clarify what a movie's doing right and if it stumbles anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
When you're removed from the experience of, like, trying to read it the first time, you know.
Yeah.
Or experiencing it the first time. All right. Thank you so much, Chris File.
Thank you.
And Murtada.
Thank you, guys. I'll talk to you soon. I'll be going to see A Star Is Born for the 17th time. By next time.
Don't go to see it for the 17th time without me. I want to see it again.
Let's do it.
Okay.